Hello, this is Daniel Jowkett.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. Get a bunch of people excited. Manton Reese, so nice to be talking to you again. And if I'm not mistaken, you have some news for us. Just a couple weeks ago, I think I was saying, Manton, you somehow keep shipping things. And you had that blog post. It was like, what was it called again? Ship it?
just everything.
Ship everything. And today you have a lesson for me and a lesson for all of our faithful listeners who are not shipping as much as Manton Reese, which is what? Ship everything. What have you got for us?
I am probably, by the time this episode goes live, going to release a web app called SearchPath, which is a search engine for blogs, websites, basically. And it's something I had the idea maybe a year ago, and I worked on it a little bit. And actually, if the listeners can remember really far back, we talked on one of the shows about how I was going to try to build an app just on the iPad, using like the iPad as a development environment. Mm. And that was this app that I started. Turned out, oh man, it was way too slow. I could not build the whole app just on the iPad. But it was that app. I started it maybe almost a year ago, 6 months, 9 months ago. And then I put it on the back burner, didn't work on it for a while. And then I finally dusted it off, renamed it, got a new name for it. I wasn't happy with the old name at all. And that, I think part of that led to not actually wanting to work on it. So got a new name, got a new domain name, got a new SSL certificate, finished the code, went through that whole process, and I'm finally ready to ship it. And I'm really happy about it. I'm really excited about it, actually.
Awesome. So you said it was a search engine for blogs?
Yeah. So here's the idea. There's so many blogs, websites out there that don't have any search, like a search box on. Like you go to the blog, you go to the website. There's no way to just say, I want to search this. So what do? You have to go to Google, you do like site colon, whatever. And if you know how to do that, a lot of blogs that use maybe WordPress use the built-in search. That's fine. A lot of people just link to Google directly. So they have a search box and just link to Google, but then you're in a different world. You're on Google. Maybe you're going to see ads, who knows what. So the idea was something that's ad-free, very fast, that's just a kind of a new way to do search. And you kind of have to see it to understand it, but basically it keeps the visitor on the site by using this like little popover for search results. So really fast, you just type in your search terms, hit enter, you get this little popover with the search, and then you can go quickly to the post or article that you wanted to see. So I think it's a new kind of take on search. I don't know if it's going to completely revolutionize search on blogs or anything, but I'm pretty proud of the way it's turned out.
And the nice thing is, you, as we talked about last week and many weeks before, anybody who you sell this service to, you will have their email address, and Twitter can't shut it down.
Yes.
Right?
No weird dependencies like that. Although I don't necessarily... So here's one of the problems that I've actually wrestled with related to the email. One of my first ideas with this is that you didn't even... This is just like repeating the same mistake. But one of my first ideas was you do this JavaScript include on your website, right? You just say, script, whatever. You link to my JavaScript and you pass your domain name in it, and it just magically works. Like, it figures out your site. If it hasn't been indexed yet, it crawls your site, downloads the posts, figures out where the text is, does all the magic it needs to do. And it would just work, and you could try it out that way. But yeah, again, that discussion we had about email addresses, I didn't want it to be completely automagic because I do want to be able to know who these people are that are trying it. So I do, on the website, I have a register button, and I do encourage you to enter your domain name. You can try it without doing that, but hopefully most people will go through that process and sign up.
So I'm curious about how do you charge people for this? Is it like honor system? I use Mint, the analytics package, and it's basically there's like a point in the code where it says, seriously, you should not be changing this code to take out my registration information, because it's all just JavaScript that, or not JavaScript, like I think PHP or something that runs.
right,
on my host. So if I become a customer of SearchPath, how do you keep me honest?
So it's different than Mint because it's completely hosted. I host it for you. You don't have the code. Ah. So you do a JavaScript include, but it points to searchpath.io/whatever. And then that's how it works. So you can't, if you haven't paid for it yet, you can use it, but the search results are only limited to like 2 hits and it has a link back to SearchPath. So to kind of shame you into buying it and to make it not super useful. It remains to be seen whether that'll be enough, right? But that was the idea, is it's kind of a trial mode. So you can put it on your website and see how it works and get a feel for it. You can also, in the dashboard interface, when you register and sign in, it'll give you a full preview kind of what the search is going to look like when it's on your website.
Huh.
So, but I liked this idea of making it extremely easy to set up. So you just paste in one line of JavaScript on your site and you're done. And my hope, and again, as we record, this hasn't actually shipped. My hope is that people will try it, like it, and then they'll be kind of like, they're kind of invested. Well, I bothered to paste this JavaScript line in, you know, I might as well sign up,
right,
and really try it and use it and pay for it. But it, hard to know until it ships, you know, whether that it's actually going to work.
Right. And so the search, the JavaScript that somebody puts on their site is going to connect to you with the domain name. And that's what basically makes it unstealable, because, like, let's say riverfold.com has this there. I can go steal that JavaScript, but then all I get is riverfold.com's search index. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, which is fine.
Yeah.
If that's what you want, then you feel free to include a search for my website on your website. But right, I don't think it's really easily stealable. The JavaScript does a little include that, you know, adds the search box optionally if you don't have one already. And then it does, you know, loads jQuery, does little Ajax stuff to do the results. I don't think you could.
No, I mean, you have ultimate control on the server end to say, like, no, redsweater.com has not paid me money.
Right.
So I'm not going to give them any indexing.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to give them, like you said, the two items. Well, that's really interesting, Manton. It's, I'm optimistic for you because it has that kind of potential to be a kind of virally self-marketing thing. I guess I don't know how much branding, if any, you're leaving on the, it's one of those things, I guess, that's kind of tricky because you want people who like stumble across a site that uses this to know how they could get their own, but you don't want to trash up somebody's site with your ad,
right,
when they're paying you.
So no branding. If you pay, there's no branding whatsoever.
Okay.
So the only branding is that the UI is very unique because it's got this little popover thing. But no, there's no, absolutely no. Because if you're paying, I mean, one of the selling points that I'm trying to make with this is you don't have to link off to Google or DuckDuckGo or some site that has their branding on your site, right?
Right.
You need to be able to kind of control search yourself. And so I don't think it would be right to put any branding.
Interesting. Well, that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I guess you could always offer, I mean, I think people who buy it and like it will be like blogging about it and tweeting about it. So maybe that's all you need. But I just think it's kind of interesting that, like, if I saw this on some site, that I wouldn't be able to figure out how to get it.
Yeah, that is true.
I'm not really sure what to make of that. But for instance, you know, when somebody buys a Subaru, there's still a brand on it, even though it's a complete outright ownership purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Something to think about, I think, whether there should just be like the tiniest little tag at the bottom of the search results that just says like powered by SearchPath.
Yeah, and the closest thing you can kind of relate it to is something like discuss or however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
One S, the comment system, which is kind of a similar, you do the JavaScript include and then you magically get all these comments. When the first time I saw that, I thought that would never fly. I didn't think anyone would use it. Now it's everywhere. That has, of course, pretty prominent branding.
Yeah.
Same thing if you do like the Facebook kind of comments and stuff, you know, you get pretty prominent Facebook branding. But those are free services.
Yeah, freemium at least.
Yeah, at least freemium. So I don't know.
I don't know. One of those things too, though, where it's easier to take it out than it is to add it later, right?
I feel like if I did do that, I would have to change the marketing website, which says no ads. It's like yeah, one of the bullets.
I think you might have to, yes.
But, you know, related to this, though, like, is the pricing. Like, I haven't actually totally finalized how much this thing is going to cost. And if it's super cheap, maybe I'd feel better about putting my own little subtle brand on it. But if it's not super cheap, I would feel like it's a kind of a premium thing people are paying, and it wouldn't be right. So right now I was going to launch at $10 a month. I've gotten feedback. Some people think that's too much. You know, maybe it should be a few bucks, $5, $7, whatever. So that's something that is still kind of very much up in the air.
Yeah. Well, I hope you pick the right price. And I think now that you've announced it on the show, well, our listeners know, I think, that Manton edits the show. So if this show is like 2, 3, 4, 5 days late, it's because he's not ready to ship his search path yet.
I think I have to ship regardless if it's already working. I mean, I've been using it on my own website for weeks. I don't think anyone's really noticed completely, but it works. I was going to ship it this morning, but I decided I needed a couple more days to fine tune a few things and also to nail this pricing.
Right. Okay. Cool. I'm excited for you, Manton. It's real. You always surprise me with this stuff. Well, in this case, you actually gave me a little sneak peek a week or two ago, but you've always got something cooking, and I'm always like kind of surprised when it's like, what I also think is interesting, especially as this is a podcast for indie Mac and iOS development. I think it's interesting the large number of web-based things you've ended up doing over the past few years. It's sort of like become it was almost like a stealth migration away from Mac and iOS stuff on some level.
Yeah, that is interesting. I still love writing Mac software, iOS software, but there's also something really nice about web apps being able to just, you know, build them. I can, if I want to ship tomorrow, I can ship it. I don't have to wait for anyone to approve it. There's something nice about it. And also there's things you can do, I think, with web apps, also with subscription services, where you have people sort of paying every month. You're just making the app better. You're not worrying about, I got to do, you know, a major 3.0 in a year.
Yeah.
There's something really nice about that model that I've been trying to experiment with, trying to make work.
Yeah, I like that aspect about it too. I've always thought it would be great to get that some of that kind of a live updated feel into desktop apps, but sort of just like this cultural expectation that's you'd be flying in the face of. So
right.
We'll see if things evolve that way as the web and the desktop sort of become more intertwined in people's minds. So speaking of web apps and the web, I guess folks who, not only that, but folks who make desktop and mobile apps related to the web, there's a new announcement this past week from Dropbox that they are releasing a new mobile sync API. Now, Manton, I mentioned before the show, I don't really understand how this differs from the existing API that Dropbox had. I know that iOS apps today, or I should say iOS apps 2 weeks ago that used Dropbox, connect up to Dropbox through an API. There's obviously not like a shared folder on iPhones, for example. And what is it about this new announcement that has people so excited? Do you understand it? Have you read it?
I've read it. I think I get it. So the confusing part maybe is that to the sync API, thinking that it's a web services API, it's not actually that at all. I mean, there may be that part of it, but it's really a new mobile SDK API that allows you to basically like kind of almost like read and write local files as if they're just local files, because they are local files, and have the Dropbox SDK in the background deal with syncing and you know, pushing files to the server, downloading them, seeing if there are changes, notifying you when there are changes. So it's a much higher level, like we take care of all the syncing work for getting a folder of files from your device to the cloud. Whereas the traditional Dropbox API is when you make a call, it's actually hitting the server right away. Mm. And then it's giving you a response back, right? You're hitting the server and it's up to you whether you want to do anything locally.
I see.
This, you're actually kind of writing locally and then the SDK is doing the work. And so it basically, if you think about like Dropbox text editors, there's a million out there now. The first few were amazing and they had to do all of this themselves. Actually, mm-hmm. more than the first few, the first couple dozen probably. They had to do all this work of managing local files, seeing when there are changes, renaming, all that kind of stuff. And now you kind of, a lot of that's just done for you by the SDK. You don't have to worry about it.
So it sounds like to the extent that on the Mac, for example, the Dropbox folder is, quote, just a folder that apps write to and read from. Is that what this is doing for mobile? Is basically giving you the ability to have your own folder on in the private, like iOS files folder for your app, have that folder be treated as if it were inside a Dropbox folder?
That's kind of what it feels like. You still use their API for reading or writing. You don't use, you know, you can't just create a file in a special place. I don't think. Maybe you can. But in their examples, you still, when you want to get a list of files, you still use their SDK.
Okay.
But yeah, but it really all it is doing is kind of working locally and then firing off some sort of background thread that is dealing with the sync stuff. The folder is actually interesting too, because as far as I can tell, this only works with the new app folders, sort of kind of sandbox-ish model that Dropbox has. So if you never worked with Dropbox before, they used to have, you had your Dropbox folder and it had documents, pictures, you know, had whatever folders that you could put. And when you had access to the Dropbox API, you could read and write everywhere. And then they introduced this apps folder model where at the top level of your Dropbox folder, you have an apps folder. Inside you have, for example, I use this. So you have like Tweet Library inside it. You have Watermark. You have, you know, whatever. And then when the user grants your app access to Dropbox, you only can read and write to that specific folder. So I think it's very similar to kind of sandboxing in the sense that you're prevented from messing up the rest of the Dropbox. But anyway, as far as I can tell, this new API only works with that. So they're encouraging people to use this.
Right.
And which I'm fine with. I think I like this sort of safety of just having this, the app specific stuff in one place. And if you need full access to Dropbox, you can still request it. That's still a permission you can have. But for the stuff that I'm usually doing, that specific folder is enough. And they also, one reason I never really bothered me is that unlike sort of Apple and their approach to sandboxing, Dropbox never broke old apps. They never said you have to rewrite your apps to use the app folders. You know, old apps can still have access to everything they've always had. So
right.
It's almost the best of both worlds in a sense. But anyway, the new API, I believe, only works with that.
Cool. Well, it looks good. It seems like a lot of people are excited about it. And as we've been discussing, we can use all the help we can get with anything that involves syncing. I mean, it sounds like this doesn't really do anything like on the level of handling conflicts or things like that. I guess, have you looked at Dropbox? What do they do in the case of a conflict? Is it a situation where they just like give you two files or something? Or
I'm not sure from the API level. I know from just using Dropbox, every once in a while I will end up with two files.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's, like, in particular, this has happened a couple of times with like big zip files. I don't know if maybe there's something about that where they can't do anything smart. But I've seen that once before where you'll get like a .1 file version of the file.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I don't know from the API. I'm not very familiar with that.
Cool.
This week we're sponsored again by Crashlytics. Crashlytics is an iOS crash reporting framework that I use in my own apps. It's Simple framework you can include in your app. You make a couple calls, and then your crashes, when your apps crash, are sent up to Crashlytics servers where you can then log in. You have a dashboard where you can see the crashes. You can search the crashes and mark them as, you know, fixed already. See what the problem is with your apps, and then troubleshoot that way. So really nice crash reporting framework.
You know, it's interesting about we talked last week, I think, about the fact that Crashlytics had been acquired by Twitter, and Twitter is just on a tear acquiring companies in not just in Boston, but in this very specific area of Greater Boston, Kendall Square in Cambridge. So they just acquired another company called Bluefin Labs, and it's notable, I guess, just that in the sense that, you know, we talked before about how Crashlytics, I think this acquisition by Twitter holds them up as like being, you know, kind of like obviously funded for the long run. And there was a tweet from Dick Costolo from Twitter that said, after talking to the teams at Crashlytics and Bluefin Labs, I'm even more excited about our plans for Twitter Boston. So I thought that was kind of interesting, kind of a sign that these companies are perhaps like the cornerstone, you know, establishment of what will be a bigger Twitter presence in Boston.
So, yeah, it sounds like they've got a plan there, long-term plan. So
step one, buy every company in Kendall Square. But anyway, good news for Crashlytics customers, because it's just one more sign that this great service is sticking around in their Twitter Boston headquarters, I guess.
Cool.
So thanks again, Crashlytics. Folks, you can go to crashlytics.com for more info about this great service. So moving on to our Q&A this week, we have a question from Isaac via ADN, who asked us, appropriately enough, to discuss the ADN app, that's app.net APIs. I haven't used the APIs, but you know, this is, I guess, our various web services APIs show. Manton, of course, being the web services maven that he is, has used app.net's APIs. Kind of a general question, Manton, but I guess probably just wants to get kind of like a 10,000-foot level view of, you know, what's it like to work with these APIs. Obviously, you've worked with Twitter's APIs. You can compare and contrast. Have you been satisfied with the stuff that ADN has?
Yeah, I like the ADN API a lot. I haven't done a lot with it. The most I've done is adding app.net support to my Watermark web app, so you can post ADN and it downloads your timeline and replies and things like that. So the basic Twitter-like things is what I've done.
Right.
And compared to the Twitter API, if anyone's used that, the ADN API is similar, but it's like better in all the little rough areas that Twitter got wrong. So it's like they had the advantage, obviously, of coming a few years later, and they could look at it and say, okay, what do people not like? Let's just kind of polish it up a little bit. So I like the app.net API a lot, and they keep adding stuff. I mean, it's actually really mature now in terms of the wide variety of, you know, things it can do. They announced recently file storage. So this is something that obviously Twitter can't do, but you can upload files. This is every user gets, I think, 10 gig of storage. You can do that. They have a really nice messaging API. So it's kind of like Twitter direct messages, but much more flexible, and much just better design. It was well thought out. They wanted this from the start. And I think they wanted, if you listen to some of the app.net podcasts, they talk about this, about how they think the messaging is just a huge opportunity and something they can do really well that Twitter can't, because Twitter doesn't care about it because they can't really sell ads on it. It's kind of like just this private, simple stream. Whereas app.net doesn't have to worry about that. They don't have ads. They never will. They can just focus on making the API really good.
Right. And I think I use app.net, but I just sort of in and out. You know, I use it more and less as I get reminded that folks are actually over there and you know, chatting with each other. I was really impressed when I got this direct message on app.net, and then I realized I was in a direct message with more than one person, and it had been set up that way from, you know, the person who initiated the direct message had included somebody else. So the three of us were in this direct message conference, so to speak. And I was just like, wow, this is not something you can do on Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like people are building around this stuff. We'll see what people build around the 10 gigabyte storage. I mean, you could imagine, obviously, that's useful for just like sharing videos and maintaining ownership of them. That was always one of the things that kind of bugged me about uploading to like TwitPic or something. I was like, okay, this is on TwitPic now, linked to from Twitter. What if TwitPic goes away?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of nice just having everything in the same spot. But speaking of like the multiple people in a DM thing, there was like this, I don't know if it's supposed to be like ultimately a real service or if it's just like a technology demo, but it's called Patter, and it turns app.net into an IRC channel where you've got everybody typing and you see their messages live, and you can like, you know, look at their identities and their identities are all their app.net account. And I just thought that was so interesting that you can envision any number of services coming out of this. It's like I speculated about this a long time ago, or not speculated, but I guess I dreamed about this idea of owning a social graph independent of the services, right?
Mm-hmm.
And app.net has kind of turned into that. I mean, obviously, they ultimately own the canonical graph as it is today, but yeah. I love the fact that, you know, like a lot of other services say, like, sign in with your Facebook account, sign in with your Twitter account. But it doesn't really seem to leverage, like, the identity that comes with that. I don't know. Maybe I'm not seeing it as much as it is doing that. But I like that about this.
No, I think you're right. And I think that we've seen cases where Twitter and Facebook don't want certain developers to use the sign-in's okay, but like the friends list and who you're following, they don't want you to use that without sort of giving anything back,
right,
to Twitter. And so they'll do things like shut off. I think it was, did Twitter shut off Instagram's friend following thing? I don't know. I can't remember which way it went, but there was a couple of these examples where an app had to turn off this feature because Twitter or Facebook or whoever didn't like that use of the API. And those are the kind of things we won't see with app.net because they don't care how you use it. You know, they have
right.
paying customers.
It's like a stunning premise to keep coming back to, that you constantly kind of get reminded like, oh, you can do whatever you want because all they really want is your $30 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Yeah, this question he asks, you know, what are the possibilities of the API? Obviously, Twitter-like stuff is possible. We've talked about the direct messaging being way more advanced. Another thing that I haven't seen too many people use yet is the annotations. So this is something Twitter promised, and then they ended up not shipping. App.net shipped it pretty early on, and it's where you can attach, you know, metadata to a post. And I personally am not sure I have a use for this yet, but one of the really cool app I've seen that uses this is called longposts.com, and it's a blogging platform, basically. But you sign in with your app.net credentials, and then you get this little text box, so you can put in Markdown and you can post to it. But the thing that is super clever, and I didn't get this when I first used it, I only got it when he open sourced it and I downloaded the source and kind of ran my own copy to play with it, is that he doesn't actually store the blog posts on his server at all. He puts them in an annotation in the app.net post. So on his server, he just stores like the app.net post ID or something. And then when he wants to show the post on his website, he just pulls it from app.net. And so, like, you know, usually, like, let's say you post an Instagram photo or Vine video or something, and it automatically posts, you know, a tweet that says, you know, check out my Instagram photo or whatever, and links to it. So this does that, you know, read my blog post, here's the
link.
Right. But the metadata inside that post actually has the full blog post.
That's
so
that's crazy.
Yeah. So really interesting use of the API. And I think, you know, like this question asks, what can we do with it? You can do a lot with this thing. I think there's a lot of apps that we haven't even seen yet that'll be possible with this.
Right. Well, it's really fascinating to see that app.net is actually not only surviving, but thriving. It seems like they are, you know, they passed a point where you remember, Manton, we were, or at least I was super skeptical. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember thinking that they wouldn't even make their initial funding goal.
Right.
And they've really been proving everybody wrong. I mean, I still maintain this is not a Twitter competitor. You know, it happens to have been an alternative to Twitter that you chose, but especially the way they keep expanding their infrastructure and changing the types of things you can do, it's like they're just as likely to empower something drastically different from Twitter than as they are to sort of become attractive enough to make Twitter people want to go there instead. You know, I don't think viewing them as a Twitter competitor is appropriate at all. I think it's like this clever thing that they did to make a relatively similar to Twitter clone. And that was just kind of like almost a proof of concept for their platform.
Yeah, I think that's right. It allowed them to get a bunch of people excited about the platform, get people to use it. But the scope of this is just so much bigger. And it's great to see it's kind of start to roll out.
Yeah. Well, Isaac, I don't know if we talked about the API quite to the extent that you expected, but we did talk about app.net and the various stuff you can do through their API. So hopefully that was helpful. Manton, I think we better wrap this one up. Is there anything else you want to chat about today?
Yeah, I think that's good. That's the show.
Awesome. Well, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you.